This is an RNZ podcast.
And that means it's time for Midweek Media Watch with our friend Colin Peacock, who joins us from the Wellington studio. Colin, kia ora to you.
Kia ora, Emil.
You've done yourself a mischief, Colin.
I have, yeah, a little bit of an injury. So just fell off a workbench at home and onto my ribs, which knocked the wind out of me. So basically, don't make me laugh or sneeze.
That won't be a problem
or
at
fart.
All.
No, I wouldn't do that in the studio anyway. But no, any of that stuff. So this has got to be extremely serious.
Very dry, serious Midweek Media Watch. All right, I'm glad
all
to
the
hear
way to
that,
the top of the hour. No
exactly.
Jokes.
No, we've established this at the outset. Nonetheless, your injury means that you've had plenty of time to catch up on some sport, Cole.
Yeah, including a sport I don't often watch. In fact, two variants of the same sport. This is a sport called rugby.
Rugby.
Rugby. Rugby has originated in the United Kingdom some time ago, and New Zealand's quite good at it, turns out. Yeah, so I don't watch a whole lot of rugby, but on Saturday, I was laid up with no prospect of getting to sleep in a hurry. So I watched, although it wasn't especially late, the Warriors, New Zealand Warriors against the Cronulla Sharks, and it was Sean Johnson's last game. This was obviously a big deal for Warriors fans. It reminded me a bit when I'd been overseas, came back to New Zealand. It was the time when the Warriors were going great guns, and Stacey Jones was the man, and it felt like a bit of that. But of course, the Warriors are not up for the finals at the moment. They haven't performed well enough through the season. But this was his last game. They called. But while it was a big deal, obviously, for the Warriors fans, I think Cronulla actually had more to play for. And I figured that this is when we often, it's the Aussie commentators that were doing the commentary. And I didn't think that they would care so much about that. And I thought New Zealand fans might be a bit disappointed. But they really, really bought into it. And of course, as we now know, Sean Johnson won the match with a wonder pass right at the end. Brilliant piece of play. This is how the Foxtel team called that moment.
Possibly their last chance. Egan to Walker. Johnson right side. Ball out to McTavish.
Cut it out.
Johnson writes his own script. Written, produced, directed by Sean Johnson. The movie, his last game, wins it for the Warriors.
What a moment.
Oh, that's great, Cole.
It
that's
is, isn't
great.
It? Yeah, like it really, really brings it to life. So even as a non-loogie, I thought that was brilliant. And they clearly bought into the moment for Sean Johnson. Fantastic bit of commentary, because normally, you know, you have your sideline side comments guy, the co-commentator, and they're not really meant to make noise, are they? They're meant to leave it to the commentator and just chip in later. But that guy was just making a whole sort of bed of like noise all the way through, while the other guy, I don't even know their names, was babbling about the Sean Johnson movie. Yeah, good stuff. And I think Kiwi fans do get irritated. I know Phoenix football supporters have this when they go over and play in Australia particularly, and the commentators over there don't seem at all interested or in being fair to the Phoenix.
Even-handed, yes.
There's definitely something in that. But I've got to hand it to those. They really brought that to life. And they let that moment rest a bit after the try. It was a bit of a lull while they waited for the conversion, which was also Sean Johnson. But they came back with this to pick it up again.
Well, I'll say it.
I'm stunned.
This is incredible. This is ridiculous. This is 15 out of 10 on the incredible meter.
Look at this.
I would like to think they actually did have, you know, sitting between them some bit of analog equipment with a needle on it, you know, that is the incredible meter.
A graphic, some kind of elaborate graphic in studio, yeah.
No, I
want
an actual square box made of, you know, tin with a spring on the front and a dial, the incredible meter. Yeah, I'd love to think that actually existed. So Sean Johnson lined up that final kick. This was his last kick forever in his NRL career, and they got almost sort of philosophical about it.
It just continues to deliver rugby league. Look you can't wipe the smile off his face.
Well, if he gets this.
Oh, this is...
If he gets this.
It doesn't matter if he gets it. He's just done there.
That's the end of the movie. And then they run the credits. And then there's that last little clip. That's the shot.
What an exclamation mark on your career. What a moment.
Please. It's the best game on the planet. It's the best sport on the planet. Here we go.
Sean Johnson. I think the Cronulla fans now want him to get it. Johnson! No, oh, don't worry about it. Come back next year, have another crack.
They're having a great time, and I'm here for it.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, rugby league, best sport on the planet. Don't know about that. But no, they certainly do their best, their commentary. Everyone else will know the names of presumably these ex-league legends. I just don't know them at all. But
I didn't recognise them. But I was thinking, rugby league, you might quibble with that moniker, best sport on the planet. But I do think that they have a rich history of fantastic commentators. Ray Warren, if you remember Ray Warren, husky.
His voice I could definitely, I could definitely pick. Doesn't sound like that, but
risky business doing a Ray Warren impression. Yeah. Even Ray Warren during the swimming, I remember he commentated the swimming at the Sydney Olympics in 2000 when Ian Thorpe won all of the those medals, and just fantastic. And that line though, you couldn't script this. It is a real cliche of commentary, but
yeah, they really,
it was a beautiful moment.
They really worked that hard, didn't they?
Yeah.
But I think that was kind of almost literally true, the movie thing with the All Black Test later on in Johannesburg. So I was still up. So I watched that because it was about 3 a.m. and I couldn't sleep with my suffering. And that really was, you know, almost sort of cinematic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they send Sky Sports a local commentary team when the All Blacks play overseas. And that makes a big difference when it comes to games like this, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, see, I don't like the palaver, you know, the anthems and all that stuff when, and you know, the shaking hands and the, like for football, the FIFA respect thing, all of that and the ceremony. I wish they should just run down the tunnel, like belt out of the tunnel, kick it off immediately, do it, leave again. No children on the pitch, no medals, no nothing. So I don't like it. But this match, they really did, but they had the jumbo jet flying over in a sort of reprise of the 1995 World Cup final.
Yeah.
The anthems were intense. Oh, it was quite something to watch. But yeah, the commentary thing does make a difference because they had Tony Johnston for commentating for the Sky Sports New Zealand team. And after South Africa scored a controversial try, which on replays looked like it should have been a knock-on, the guy didn't ground the ball. He sort of broke the, I don't know if this is the right term, but sort of broke the fourth wall a bit. This is how Tony Johnston registered his disapproval.
Big calls, but the biggest one right now is the fact that that try was even awarded. I don't know that we're going to see too many replays of it.
So he's sort of signalling to the New Zealand viewers that this is a South African production crew. There's a controversial moment. Don't think they're going to show too much evidence of the fact that shouldn't be called a try, which ended up, you know, probably being quite crucial.
It was one of those matches, wasn't it? By the way, Sam in Christchurch has sent us a text, Cole. Andrew Voss and Mick Ennis were the commentators. Vossy loves the Warriors, apparently. And next year, I'm reliably informed, is our year. So there you go. There you go. Any other big moments from that test match from a media nerd perspective?
Yes. I'm not a rugby head, I'm a media head. There was just, like I was saying earlier, I'm not a big fan of all the ceremonial stuff and the before and after, but Sia Khaleesi, the Springbok captain, one of the big personalities of the game, world game at the moment, he gave us a post-match interview, and it's kind of hard to hear because there's so much noise going on, but he was asked all the standard questions about unforced errors and, you know, how did you get back into the game once you were behind, but he's kind of volunteered this answer in his final question.
I'm really proud of the boys, but the job is not done. You know, we still got a lot to do, and I want to say it's 30 years of freedom, you know, and I want to say congratulations to South Africans, but we still know there are many people who are still not free. Hopefully the next celebration to celebrate is the women who are free from gender-based violence. So yeah, let's celebrate 30 years, but there's so many people who are still not free yet.
Yeah, so there's a bit of a blip in the feed there. But yeah, what he was saying, 30 years of freedom, he says, so since 1994 and South Africa's first democratic election. But he said women still not free from gender-based violence. And, you know, that was in response to a question about, you know, how did you come back from that yellow card, which took you down to 14 men in the first half or something like that. So he was determined to get that in. And then they cut back to the Sky Sports studio with, you know, Laura McGoldrick, Mulls Molina and Jeff Wilson, and just kind of didn't say anything about them. And I thought, you know, they ramp up this thing about, oh, the sporting history of this fixture, you know, the first game back in, was it 1992? And then, you know, back to the 50s and Becker and Skinner, all that stuff, the sporting history. But when Khaleesi talked about the actual, you know, history, South African history, they didn't have much to say, which was kind of a shame.
Yeah, that is interesting. It is interesting to see how many really high-profile sports people are willing to come out and make political statements. You might remember during the Euros, a bunch of the French players made really quite explicit political statements about the French election. Kylian Mbappe, one of the most famous players in the world, talking about not letting Marine Le Pen's party win an outright majority in Parliament. And that is something that we don't see so much from New Zealand sports people. But it is interesting seeing high profile people, sports people, leverage their platforms in that way.
Well, I did look up to see, did the world's media make much of this, or South African media? And there were some references in UK papers picked that up. I mean, he speaks out about social issues quite a bit and represents various charities and initiatives and so on. So maybe in South Africa itself, it's a bit like, he says this. Maybe it's not a novel thing.
Right.
But it was just kind of a bit jarring that they cut straight from that back into the New Zealand studio. Yeah. And then it was all into discussing referees' calls and all that. One other thing that did strike me just from the media perspective was like with that shot they have in rugby tests where the coaching team sits behind glass panels right up at the top of the grandstand. When things are going wrong, you see them through the sort of mucky glass, and they're sort of razor looking glazed as co-coaches as the game is slipping away from them. They look like sort of distressed sea captains, you know, staring at an obstacle they can't avoid or something like that. It's a bit odd. I don't know where the league coaches sit, but you don't seem to see them during the games.
I think they throw things around quite a lot as well. It's good fun. All right, let's talk about the Pacific Island Leaders Forum, because last week on Media Watch you covered RNZ reporter Lydia Lewis capturing some headline-making comments from Anthony Albanese, the Australian Prime Minister. They made him a bit happy. And it's happened again, Colin.
Yeah, it has. So this was all to do with at the end of the forum. China wants all mention of Taiwan removed from the final communique of the Leaders' Summit, which was held in Tonga. And there was an angry response from China when it looked like the forum was going to stick with Taiwan's status quo as a development partner. And then Lydia Lewis of RNZ Pacific, who captured Anthony Albanese, Aussie Prime Minister, chit-chatting in a fairly loose manner with the US Secretary of State Kurt Campbell and his own Pacific Minister. She again captured video which was about assurances being given to China's ambassador to the Pacific. Here is a part of Lydia's excellent wrap-up report, which was on Morning Report on Tuesday.
China's Pacific ambassador, Tian Bo, ran to the first Pacific leader he could find after exploding to media over the inclusion of Taiwan in the final communique.
It must be corrected. This is surprising, you know, mistake made by someone.
The communique was taken down shortly after an interaction with Cook Islands Prime Minister and former Pacific Islands Forum Chair Mark Brown, in which RNZ Pacific captured Mr. Brown saying, "We'll remove it in a live photo."
Wow. That was a great report, that one. Mm. Is it unusual for these sorts of comments, these diplomatic comments, to be aired in this way, Colin?
Yeah, really rare, although that reaction from China there, maybe they did want it all out in the open. But, I mean, it's interesting, because with the previous one, the Australian PM, which we looked at on the Media Watch program in the weekend, there were people lining up to say, what did you expect? There's journalists with their lanyards, everyone's got a phone, you know, you're talking out loud. You know, he didn't have a leg to stand on there. So it is interesting, but I think also quite quite telling, because usually these things are so structured and the language so stultifying, and you don't see the behind the scenes stuff. So to see it playing out a little bit and being captured by, and that, look, doesn't it just show the value of sending journalists, spending the money or taking the time, whatever, to go attend these events? And probably what happens in our part of the world is, you know, undercovered around the Pacific by our own media, even though it's supposedly our backyard, and the big tensions, China, Taiwan, huge issues, which, you know, we need to be aware of. So, yeah, I think it's all good that it came out the way that it did.
Good coverage in general, you think?
Yep, think so. And, you know, that actually was the reason that the first incident with the Australian Prime Minister, how the Pacific policing deal, you know, $400 million deal, really significant stuff came to light. And yeah, there was an excellent, just to praise the Post, and Glenn McLean stuff, I think he's a Palmerston, a New Plymouth-based stuff journalist. He wrote an excellent piece before that, so partway through the forum, about the whole concept of centrality, which New Zealand supports, which is, you know, not about the big powers or France, China, New Zealand outside the Pacific Islands, respecting the collective agreements made within the forum. And that was an excellent and timely explainer. So, yeah, I've learned a lot from the journalists who took the trouble to observe and to go there and to report. So, yeah, good stuff.
Now, Michael has sent us a text, Colin. For Colin, it reads, what about some coverage or Colin's thoughts on Kingi Tuheitia's tangi? Awesome, says Michael, on for such a small outlet, the most interesting TV all week. And you are going to be doing this in some depth this weekend on Media Watch. But should we just finish up by talking a bit about that?
Yeah, well, there's still a bit to go, isn't there? Because we're going to have the ceremony tomorrow for the selection of the tangi, of course, and then the new monarch being chosen and appointed and announced. So, yeah, lots to go. But I was thinking back to 2006 when Te Ariki Nui Dame Taitarangi Kahu died. And back then, I remember Simon Dello presenting One News was praised for being able to say her name without stumbling, and probably a little better than I did there. And, you know, back then that was seen as extraordinary. Now I think I'm sure it would be expected that at least that would not be a problem or an issue. And as was pointed out by a number of people this past week, TVNZ has Yvonne Tahana there, Tianua Hurihanga Nui, Māori Issues reporter. They have Melissa Stokes, presenter, and their political editor is Mikey Sherman, with a strong background in reporting Māori politics and Te Ao Māori. So lots of strength there for their coverage. I haven't seen a whole lot of Whakaata Māori, I must admit, but there's been live streams on the Kingatanga's own channel on YouTube, and Te Ao Māori News, which is Whakaata Māori's news service, has been live streaming on Facebook as well. So lots of people probably picking it up from there, and other media have been running those live streams as well. Today, actually, just to play you a little bit, I literally just dropped the needle and turned. It was the end of the two porphyry today with a gap in the middle, and it all looked, the pictures looked very ceremonial and somber when I tuned in, but when I turned the sound up, not quite so much. I have to say, I don't know who the speaker is here, and I could not find out. There were no captions, and the live blogs didn't reference who it was, but a mix of te reo and English here, and you know, something to indicate that it wasn't in all the somber mood 24/7 throughout the whole thing.
Kau rea tūro, ko au te kaikōrera whakamutunga, nō reira e hi ana au te kai hoki, me rātou hoki, tino hariko, because I'm the last speaker, so you must be pretty happy about that. We can smell the kai cooking somewhere, so I'm not going to let those fellas shake their stick at me and tell me to sit down and hurry up, so I'll be smart about it. Ko wai ahau.
It's nice. That's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, if you hadn't mixed up the language, I wouldn't have known not being fluent in te reo. So, yeah, interesting stuff. And there were other moments like that, and Julian Wilcox anchoring the coverage in between the porphyry, speaking to guests, interviewing them in, occasionally in English, mostly in te reo, but lots of laughter and so on. So, yeah, not quite the atmosphere I had expected for that event. And but I guess tomorrow maybe it will be more somber and serious, but we'll see.
It is a big historical event. Are all media carrying coverage of this, Colin?
Yeah, some are, some aren't, not so much. I do remember just last week I was looking at the, because we were talking to TVNZ's head of news and Paul Thompson about, they were both put out statements about trust and their ratings and so on. And it was noted that Newstalk ZB, for example, with a large audience in the morning, didn't do anything outside its news bulletins, maybe felt they could leave it to other bulletins. But the Herald website, you know, their stable mates certainly did. So it's been pretty mixed. I've had a couple of of messages from Māori journalists saying, look, you know, the coverage is sort of patchy and you can see where the gaps are. Some said there were bad bits of mainstream coverage. Haven't been specific about that, so we'll try and follow up on that. But some lovely colour pieces, indeed, just a couple to pick out really briefly. One by Māori Issues reporter here at RNZ, Pōkiri Parewai. Lovely one on the sort of manaakitanga on display at Tūranga Waiwai, yeah. You know, how they organised everything. And another one by Leila Bailey McDowell, who's the Hino Te Ua news journalism intern here at RNZ, did a lovely piece on you know, the clockwork that keeps it all ticking, all the stuff behind the scenes, lovely stuff.
Yeah, great stuff. And we'll look forward to Sunday to hear a thorough roundup and analysis of that. Colin Peacock in Midweek Media Watch, always a pleasure, Cole. Nice chatting.
All good. Thanks, Emil.
All the best with the recovery. Hopefully, Colin didn't laugh too much.
No, I didn't. Kept it bottled up.